Thank you, Dr. Behrendt. Good day to everybody. Greetings to those of you online. Certainly hope that you're having a wonderful Sabbath wherever you are. I have a question for you. What, the more and more it falls, it gets higher and higher. What is it? Snow, right? We're going to get a ton of it, seems like. It's starting to, temperature's starting to go down, like 17 tonight, I think somebody said, minus 17. So we're sort of heading into the winter for sure, the dark period. I want to ask you today, how many of you have ever had the opportunity to build a house? Hey, look at that. Wow, let's show of hands. Just about a large majority of the audience. I'll bet you learned a lot. One of the things that happened to us when we first house we built was we learned an awful lot about building houses. Luckily, I ran into a gentleman who was an old carpenter, an older fellow, and we managed to hire him to help us with the house. And it was amazing what he told us and how the little things that he showed us. If you were lucky enough to find somebody like that, they save you a lot of heartache and a lot of headache down the road later on. Because if you don't do it quite right at the beginning, for instance, if your foundation isn't exactly the way it's supposed to be, you can run into all kinds of heartache and headache later on. Now, Jesus used the analogy of building a house to show the importance of learning to do what is right as a Christian. Matthew 7 and verse 24, he says, "Therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine," it's like building a house, Matthew chapter 7 and verse 24, "whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken him to a wise man who built his house on the rock." Someone who was wise, who did things correctly, who saved themselves a lot of heartache and a lot of trouble down the roads. There's a lot of people today, had they just heeded the words of Jesus Christ, if they'd known them and heeded those words, there would be a lot less heartache in the world today. Most people's lives, when you begin to look into their experiences, many of the things could have been avoided just by a few principles that Jesus showed us and shows us in his word. Verse 25, it says, "The rain descended, the floods came, the winds blew and beat on that house. It did not fall, for it was founded on the rock." It didn't fall. It stood. We built a house one time out in Onaway, and the interesting part about it was the development area was all sand. The whole place was sand. It was just down, I don't know how many feet down, but it was sand all over. And it was amazing that this analogy kept popping back into my mind all the time. You build your house on sand. I don't know if this is such a good idea or not. Now, thankfully, there's no oceans around and no hurricanes. So the house stood, but we put the foundation down, and it was literally on sand. The whole thing was, all the wall, you know, and we looked at that, and I kind of looked at it, and I thought, boy, this is kind of scary, a little bit scary. But the house did stand. We built it, and unfortunately, the sidewalk would never stay where it was supposed to stay. But it just, you know, I got reminded of this time after time. You just get a little bit of rain, and we had the sidewalk blocks basically around the house, and they were on sand. You get a little bit of rain, and here they are. They're all over the place. You had to redo them regularly because the sand would get washed away. So this came back many, many times to my mind about making sure that what we build on is not just sand. This gentleman that we found later on, we built a house, or I should say earlier than that, we built a house up in a little place called Sexsmith. And again, the individual, amazing, this old carpenter, the little things he told us, and sometimes the analogy works too, that people who have been around for a while have a lot to offer. They really do. The older people in the church have a lot to offer sometimes to individuals who might want some advice on things. And that came back to my mind because he saved us just tremendous amounts of trouble and problems. We've had other houses since, and you see the things that people didn't do that you know they should have done. Our deck is rotting. And it would have been very easy to avoid that had the person did it correctly. The old carpenter told us when we built our deck, take a spike, you know, a large nail, put it in between the 2x4s, when you're nailing them down so you don't get the water laying on top. Well, the deck we have, somebody didn't do that. The water lays on top and it's rotting. One of these days my foot might go somewhere. But it just, again, the thing, a small little thing, but it could have saved a lot of trouble down the road. And Jesus is trying to tell us that. Make sure that we listen to the advice that he gives. He's saying, build your house on a rock. Build it solid. Build it so that it won't get shaken, that it won't be washed away. There are some houses you don't want to be in. Let's look at one, Proverbs chapter 9. Proverbs chapter 9, verse 17. The world offers a lot of stuff today that people don't want to get involved in. Maybe people want to get involved in, but they shouldn't be involved in it. Stolen water is sweet. This talks about a very simple person who makes a very classic error, classic mistake. Stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. Oh, it seems pleasurable. Seems like fun. Verse 18, he does not know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of hell. The wrong kind of house to be building. The destiny of people who do that, they're just looking for trouble and trouble and more trouble. And what does our world look like today? Terrible problems for people, terrible problems in marriage. Many, many people who have wished they hadn't done this or hadn't done that or had made a different choice earlier on in life. The ones who are suffering today from diseases, from AIDS or whatever. I am sure if they could only go back, you know, we oftentimes think, well, I wish I could do this differently. If I'd only done this differently. And instead, you can't do that. You've made a mistake. It doesn't go away. The results stay for a long time. In our case, of course, we can come to God and ask for forgiveness for our mistakes and that. But oftentimes those pains, the fruits of that way of life, do not go away. Some of those penalties are there for the rest of time. And so we have to ask ourselves, what is our goal? Before you build a house, before we built a house out in Onaway, we had a friend who was an architect. So we went down and sat down with him, said, this is what we'd like to have. Can you do this? And so we decided we wanted the basement to be a sort of a type of a bi-level basement, but we didn't like the bi-level front, so we said, can we make a bi-level basement but make a part that comes out in the front with the roof shaped differently? Oh, he said, yeah, you can do that. So we designed it that way, and the house is still standing today, I think. The last time I was out there, it's still there. And it looks fantastic. We thought it was just terrific. It's exactly what we wanted. We had planned, this is the kind of house that we want. And we had it in our mind and just sketches of it and this kind of thing. And so we ask ourselves, as spiritual Christians, what kind of house do we want? We've got to think about that ahead of time. What house do you want? What is your spiritual house going to look like for all eternity? It's a good idea to think about that. What do I want to build? Because time slips by. Time goes by so quickly, and we can waste the time. Maybe not take full advantage of what we want to build. Maybe we haven't thought it through quite. What kind of design do I want? And then we go and we say, here's how we're going to do it. Make the drawings and do all of the different things that are necessary. Here's my plan. Now, have we thought about that lately? What is my plan for this year? Almost everybody who's successful will have a plan in business or wherever it is. They'll be successful if they have this plan, generally, and they work towards the plan. And so God is saying to us, you can build a house. You can build a really fine spiritual house, a wonderful house on the rock. But are you going to do it? And so we have to ask that question. We even sing about it, don't we? Unless the Lord shall build the house, the weary children toil in vain. So we have to think about it. The good foundation, even though that house we built in Onaway was on sand, the foundation was solid, and so it worked out and there was no problem. But the foundation was built properly, and we made sure it was absolutely set correctly and absolutely balanced correctly. The footings were exactly right, and the house was fine. The foundation still was there. Now, if, like I said, if there was a hurricane, I don't think I'd want to be there. I wouldn't want to be in that house or see what happens to it. Because if all that sand starts washing away, it doesn't matter what the foundation is like. You've got to put it on rock if you really want it to stand in some of those locations. Last night we were looking at a sort of a nature program about the Athabasca. And they said, you don't build any permanent houses there. There's never any permanent houses around this area up there where the Athabasca River is. They don't build near the river at all because the river will change its stream within maybe 100 feet. In a few years, or in 50 years or whatever. So he said, you never see any permanent houses ever near the river because they'll just wash away. And so God gives us plenty of reminders, even the ones here in town that fell into the ravine, right? There was water flowing underneath, and it wasn't a solid base when the foundation got washed away. So let's look at some of these things. What builds a good house, good spiritual house? How do we do it so that we make sure it's on a rock, or we use good building products? See, there's another side of it. Have you ever built, have you ever gone into a house where you know the guy used junk to build the house? Well, we've been in houses like that. You rent houses sometimes, and you know the guy's used junk. He just found some junky wood somewhere, or some press board or something like that that he scavenged from somewhere, and he built something. And you look at, you know it's never going to be right. It's just never going to be right. I don't care what you do. You can paint it. You can do whatever you like. There'll always be a problem there with it because he didn't use good building products. And so you have that kind of a problem. And you can paint over it. You can try to patch it up. But oftentimes you'll still find the same problem is there. And it's never going to be as good as it could have been. So let's look at some of the things that we might use for building products in our houses. The first one I think that we can use as a kind of an analogy is that we better have a good furnace. You better have a good furnace, especially in this country. You don't want to be cheap when it comes to your furnace in Canada because you might have a problem with that very soon. It starts getting cold, whatever. You might use natural gas or wood or oil or whatever, the firing of a whole system, but what keeps our house going, our spiritual house? One of the foundation things really that we use is the golden rule. Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets. That can be a part of our house that will never go wrong. It'll never fail. If you have that as your driving force, your rule in your spiritual house, you'll never go wrong. Because it'll actually permeate everything we do. Think about it. When it comes to judgment, when it comes to condemnation or anything like that, do you want that done to you? Do you want to be judged harshly, unrighteously? Do you want somebody to judge you on gossip, that kind of thing? You better not, because God tells us that isn't going to work. That's not going to be a part of His foundation. That's not a part of His house. Not a part of His spirit, not a part of His character. He doesn't do that kind of thing. God judges things on mercy, etc. So when you want something to do or people to do something to you in that way, do it to them. Whatever you want, as your driving force, whatever you want people to do to you, to treat you, how you're going to treat them is very, very important for how you do treat them. Another thing in our spiritual house is we've got to be careful of what we allow in the house. You've got to be careful. Right? Who would you invite to your home? Who would you invite to your house? Think about it. There are certain people you would never invite in. You just wouldn't do that. It'd be wise not to do that. You watch the kind of character, the people that you hang around with, the kind of character that the people that are there, kind of character they have. Let's go to Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7. There's a lot out there now, isn't there? You can actually find virtually anything you want to find today on the internet. There's a lot of stuff out there. There's good stuff. There are all kinds of preachers. There are all kinds of websites that have all kinds of material. Any kind of material you would ever want to even look at is there. Anything you, and lots of stuff you would never want to look at is there. And so God gives us a warning. It's sort of like your spiritual house. What do you allow in? See, we are warned time and time again about individuals who will spread stuff, that kind of leavening. You know, we're warned about that. Christ warned about that in his days. Beware of leavening. Beware of that stuff that is dangerous. And of course, in your house, if you were making bread or something like that, you wouldn't sort of introduce other kinds of yeasts. If you do that, it can cause a problem. I'm no expert baker, but I know you want to put the right kind of yeast in, because I've made wine and I've made beer. And if you get the wrong stuff in there, you get any bacteria in there or the wrong kind of yeast or something like that, and it's awful. It's just awful. You can't even begin to use it. We had some wine last week like that. We went to a wine tasting last Saturday night, and there was one bottle of wine there that we had this sort of contest to see who got the best marks on these wines and all that kind of thing. And it was kind of fun. It was Sarah's principal's house, and they invited us to come. And it was interesting, but there was one bottle there, and everybody kind of got close to the bottle and just smelled it. And they wouldn't even begin to taste it. It was that bad. Now maybe they got some bad yeast. And God tells us, you can ruin your house very easily. You can ruin your spiritual house very, very easily by letting the wrong material in. And people have done that. God has warned us about leavening, and yet all kinds of people let leavening into their lives, and it's destroyed them spiritually. We know many people that that's happened too, because they didn't listen to a simple rule. And they would never let some hell's angel into their house, right? We wouldn't do that. We wouldn't be crazy enough to do that. We would not let a criminal in there. If we knew it was a criminal or somebody who had broken the law or was about to break the law, you'd never let them in to your home. And yet people have let leavening into their minds, into their spiritual houses, and it's infected them and it's destroyed them. I've heard individuals say to me, literally say to me, if anybody ever touches the commandments or the holy days, I'm going to be gone. You know, I wouldn't hang around somebody like that. But because they hung around and hung around and hung around, then the commandments and the holy days weren't so important anymore. And they turned their back on the commandments and holy days too. People have done that. It's happened to people, and it's dangerous for any of us to be even entertain those kinds of things. Let's go to Matthew 7 and verse 15. Jesus is warning about your home. He says, beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing. Somebody came to our home last week. Sarah was home, and they were coming around on behalf of a gas company. Now, they had proper identification. She said there was proper identification there and all that, one of those little cards and all this kind of thing. So she let the person in, but she was nervous the whole time because this fellow, she didn't know. And so you think about it, even though he had the right credentials and all that, she was still careful about it. Would you let somebody in who walked in and just said, oh, I'm from the gas company, and they didn't have any credentials or anything like that? You wouldn't let them in. Beware of false prophets, he says, who come to you in sheep's clothing. They look good. There are people who sound good and look good. They're dressed well. Hair is combed properly. They wear nice clothes. They got beautiful surroundings. They might be, have some just gorgeous places where they're preaching from or whatever, but it doesn't really mean anything. Jesus said, beware, because there are people who will dress well. They look and they have sheep's clothing on, but they inside they are ravenous wolves. They are individuals who could destroy you. Most of us, if we were ever out in the wild and we saw a bear or a wolf, we'd be quite careful. You're quite careful. I don't care. Most wolves will run away and they don't bother you. Most bears will run away and they don't bother you. But I'm still nervous a little bit. Still a bit nervous. Because you know what they are, because that's the way they're dressed. They've got their wolf clothing on, and they've got their bear clothing on. So you're a little careful. But moose I'm not scared of, and grouse I'm not scared of, and deer I'm not scared of, because they're dressed differently. They got nicer clothes. I like their clothes better. Verse 16, you will know them by their fruits. Be careful and watch. And what do they produce? Is it somebody who says, oh yeah, you can fool around a little bit in your marriage, it'll just spice it up a little bit. See, some of the people who are preaching like that, they're not necessarily preachers, but they act like preachers. They might be psychologists, psychiatrists, or people who write books about your marriage, etc. And so they have these ideas in there, but you've got to be careful. You have to analyze. You've got to know, wait a minute, what is this person actually producing? And Jesus says, do men gather grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Even so, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. And of course, we know what to look for. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down. Eventually, it will be cut down and destroyed. So someone who is teaching what is wrong is eventually going to lose their life and lose their part in God's kingdom if they don't repent of that. Therefore, by their fruits you will know them. He says, don't be fooled by anything else. That's what God is telling us. You could, and again, here's the scary part. You see, some people are dressed so well now. Do you know the people to be scared of who are hitchhiking? It's not the person who looks like an old grub. It's the guys who wear the suits and go hitchhiking. Because they know they're not going to get picked up if they look, you know, supposedly, and so they make themselves look really good. Those are the ones I'd be far more scared of. I don't pick up hitchhikers anyway. It's not a good policy, but I'd be far more afraid of the guy who's got a suit on, because you don't know whether he's got a gun inside or whatever. He looks good, but can be very, very dangerous. So be careful, Jesus said, about our homes. Who do we allow into our spiritual house? Be careful about that. Here's another aspect of what you're building and what you're putting into your home. We would put insulation in against the cold, wouldn't we? Unless you're different than me. In this kind of Canadian winter, you'd be saying, I want to make sure the insulation is the best I can get. Find the best you can get, put it in there so you know your house is going to be warm. Let's look at Matthew chapter 24 and verse 12. What is our spiritual life, house like at this time? Verse 12. The way the world is going, Jesus said, all the different troubles and problems that are going on in Matthew 24. Look at verse 12. Because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. Is your house warm? Your spiritual house filled with warmth, filled with love, with warmth and concern about others? Isn't it something when you're out freezing, you know, it's got a 25 below or something, and you're going to visit somebody, you go inside and they got a beautiful fireplace with the wood burning and crackling, and you just sit there and you just want to warm up and just enjoy. It's just beautiful. As opposed to the cold. You go to some homes that are cold, that don't have the exact same kind of atmosphere or whatever. And spiritually, it's the same. What's our house look like? We got a nice fire burning, nice and warm. People seem to flock towards us rather than against, away from us. What are we like as people? Do we have this kind of love? Are we outgoing? And do we love others like we should? Kind of a dangerous time. It's really a dangerous time in a way to live in our society, because lawlessness is happening so much, people are afraid to even show a little love. You're afraid to stop and help somebody on the road. You know, I'll stop if I see, you know, a woman and, you know, by herself or something like that. I'll always stop. But if I see two or three fellas, I'm going to make a phone call. I'm not going to stop. You learn the hard way. Nothing's happened to me personally, but there was a guy in Whitby, right where we lived in Ontario. He was stalled. I guess he stopped on the side of the road because these guys were stalled there. They found him dead. They took his car, dumped him in the trunk, I think, and they found his frozen body someplace. He just stole his car. Now, he was a good Samaritan who was trying to stop and help somebody and show some love. And what happens? He died. So people hear these stories, right? And we don't want to do that. So my personal way of handling it now is I generally phone. Even if I, most of the time, I will not even stop if I see a woman walking on the road or something like that. You're afraid to even stop there. I'll phone the police, and I'll make sure that I get them before I leave. You know, if I see somebody who's in trouble like that, I know, like if she's going to freeze to death, that's a different story. You stop and you try to help. But you generally would phone. And this is so sad. Because in my lifetime, it's changed just absolutely from one extreme to the other. In Saskatchewan, when I was a kid, you couldn't stop on the highway for anything. If you stopped, there'd be a car stop right now. Boom. First one that come along, you stop. You guys okay? Yeah, we're fine. Thanks a lot. And away you go. And there'd be car after car after car stop. Because that's the way it was. You helped each other because you knew what the winters were like, et cetera, et cetera. That's just the way it was. Not anymore. It's not like that anymore because people are afraid. We still, up in the more northern communities, there seems still to be a little more of an attitude of helping one another. But you get near the cities, and this is where the lawlessness is really taking place more dramatically than anywhere else. And so here we go. The love of many will grow cold. We have to ask ourselves, you know, how much is the world affecting us? We've got to be careful. You don't want to be foolish, but you also want to make sure that you are the kind of person that is known as loving and kind, generous, helpful, known to be like Jesus is, known to be like God the Father is, because that's the way they are, always looking after others, always trying to help, trying to assist, trying to be that kind of person that fights against that lawlessness and the sin and that attitude of love growing cold. Let's go to another thing. In a home, you want to put in a vapor seal or other seals around any openings. We're especially conscious of this because of mice. The mice seem to really want to get into our house. They want to get in our garage anyway. And they are in the garage, so we're getting a cat. Poison has kind of gone past the way we're going to try. We're going to try to get a little cat, stick it in there, see if we can get it. But that's what you want to do. And with a vapor seal in your house, you want to keep the moisture where it's supposed to be. When you want to, you get a little opening somewhere in the wall, you're going to drill a little hole in there and put a wire through. You better put some caulking around there, or you're going to have some vermin in your house. You want to try to keep that out. You want to keep snakes out. You want to keep out anything that can crawl through anything. So you seal everything as much as you can. You want to keep the flies out. What about your spiritual house? How do you handle that? Let's go to James chapter 4, verse 7. There's vermin around, isn't there? Seems like this vermin keeps on attacking as much as he possibly can. Try to influence, especially around this time of year. Quite amazing, the effect of the full moon on people. The teachers around our school up there, it's really fascinating to listen to, you know. They'll come in after having problems with class or whatever, and sit down for recess, taking a break, and, it's a full moon, wouldn't you know it, you know, guess who's at it again, you know, and they mention these kids, and I really think there's a lot to that. I don't think it's just dreaming at all. I think there's something to do with the full moon, that Satan is more active or something. And he just seems to, at this time of year, maybe because it's one of his great days coming up, he's more active and pushing. But you know, when you make an attempt to resist, it's interesting that we had a couple of serious problems this week. Sarah had one at her school. And it was kind of interesting. When she started doing certain things about it, it just like the problem just disappeared. So like you're resisting Satan, she started documenting some things, and it's like the whole problem just went away. Like Satan just disappeared. You know, and when you pray about it, when you ask God to intervene in these kind of things, incredible the changes that take place. You see God's hand just boom, because Satan is not allowed to persist to bother us. If we resist him, he's not allowed. He has to go. He's not allowed around us. Sometimes he'll poke his nose in, use people, cause problems, but when you do your part, it's like a wall goes up, wham, and it'll turn it right around and change everything. Therefore, submit to God, resist the devil, fight him back. Fight him back some way, whatever you need to do. Maybe it's a fast day. You might have to do an extra fast day or extra amount of prayer or whatever you need to do. Do a Bible study on the demons and the devil and how they act, etc. Whatever you need to do, resist the devil. And he has to leave. He has to go. He has no choice. God has stipulated when his people resist the devil has to leave. And it's always good to keep that in mind. If he's trying to poke his nose in your house, somebody's trying to get into your home who shouldn't be there, what do? You resist them. And you try to get them out, and you try to keep them out. Better to keep them out than to let them in and then try to get them out. And that's true. If anybody is trying to get into your home or whatever, we're going to try to keep them out, aren't we? We're going to try to lock the doors or seal the doors or whatever. And I always think of it as sort of like a little snake crawling around. And the way they work, mice, snakes, vermin, the way they work is they just crawl around and they try to find a hole. They try to find a little hole somewhere that you forgot to put stuff around. And then pretty soon in your basement, you've got all these spider webs all over the place, or you got a little snake crawling around or something, or the mice get in somehow. And it's amazing how they can get into those things. I don't know how they do it, but sometimes a little tiny crack somewhere in there, and they're in there. And it just, I guess, God gives us things to kind of remind us. Don't let any of those little cracks be unguarded or whatever. Don't let that happen to our spiritual house, because Satan's going to try to get in. When Christ warns us, he makes warnings and statements about, you know, watch out, be careful about this being, because he broadcasts, you know, he's the prince of the power of the air, and he comes camouflaged, so you can't recognize him. Be careful when God is telling us to do these things, he means it. Another part of this sealing off your home, maybe with a vapor seal or caulking or whatever, you got to ask, these people that are around, or the ones who are trying to get in your home, do they teach what is right? We know we can recognize Satan at some times, but in other cases you have to say, does this individual, maybe I found this neat website or whatever it is, you know, and he sounds good, it sounds really good, and I like that kind. Well, what does he teach? Matthew 5 and verse 19. Pretty clear. Jesus tells us what to watch for. What does this individual teach? Matthew 5 and verse 19. Whoever therefore breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches men so shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven, but whoever does and teaches them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. What does the person teach about the law of God? Because there's your criteria to judge on. You would ask, if somebody's coming to work in your home, he's going to do the roof, let's say, redo the roof on your house, and put new shingles on, you'd say, well, what are your credentials? You might not ask him that, but you might check around. You might say, is this guy any good? Find out, okay, did he do any houses around here? Did you do any houses in this neighborhood? He tells you, oh yeah, I did that one and that one. So you go and ask the person, well, were you happy with what he did? Were you happy with the job he produced? Did he use the right materials? And if he says, well, they said, yeah, he did a great job, then you'd hire them. So what do they teach? What does this individual teach? Does he teach the law of God? Or does he just sound good and doesn't say anything about the law? Because there are people who are sort of do that. They'll avoid the issue. They'll avoid the issue. What do they teach about the holy days? See, part of your home includes things like the commandments of God, don't they? And the holy days of God. That's part of your spiritual house. It's part and parcel. It's built in to the whole home. Interesting, a Chinese proverb here, it says, if there's righteousness in the heart, there will be beauty in the character. If there's beauty in the character, there will be harmony in the home. If there's harmony in the home, there will be order in the nation. Well, interesting, isn't it? Well, what's really destroying our nation? Our homes. Our homes are being destroyed. So boiling down to it, if the kids who have, you know, it's sad to see what's going on, because instead of having a stable kind of environment, you have children now that are growing up. In the vast majority of cases now, kids that are growing up with unstable, something unstable in their background, which hurts them as far as their own development. If you've got serious problems going on at home, how do you learn? You got a kid who's so upset because, you know, mom and dad are fighting all the time or whatever. How do they learn? They don't, you know. They lose their motivation. They don't care. That's what it starts to boil down to. They don't care. And they don't care how they talk to the teachers, and they don't care how they respond. They don't listen. That's what happens when you have the sad part of what's going on in our society. It's sad to see what's happening, because we're going to end up going down the tubes. That doesn't mean we're not accomplishing things economically or whatever. You can still make progress in certain ways. But the bottom line is your stability of your nation is being destroyed. The backbone of the nation is being destroyed. Your future is being hurt. The future, of course, is the children. It's sad to see that happening. So we have to ask, you know, what's going on in our society? We got to think about it. Are we letting our homes getting infected? Remember these people out in, what was it, Stony Plain or somewhere? They had that fungus in their house or whatever it was, and they finally had to go and destroy the house. Just absolutely had to destroy it. Now, somehow that fungus got in there. How did it get in the home? Now, if they would have known that they brought home some wood or something, or maybe it was on a piece of wood, or maybe it was on some fruit, or maybe vegetables or something, they would have been very careful. I don't even know what the fungus was, and I don't know how it got in there or anything, but I'm just saying the principle would be, immediately, if you knew that something was on that wood, and you were taking it into your home, say it was filled with termites or something, right? Big tree. Ah, this looks like good firewood, you know, and you cut it down, it's full of termites. Ah, termites don't hurt anything. Would you take it home, stack it up in your basement, get ready to use it for your fireplace? I don't think so. We'd know right away. No, I'm not going to do that. You don't take anything like that into your home. So, the way we are with our spiritual homes, let's make sure we don't let something in there. Don't let any termites in there that'll eat away at your foundation or eat away at the wood of the house or whatever. My mom and dad's old house in Moose Jaw, it was built back in the 40s, I think. And we bought it back in 1947. But what's been happening all the way along is that the foundation has been going. The walls are actually disintegrating. And so you have in the basement, you know, you got places where my dad used to try to patch it up all the time. He'd try to cover it. So he'd get this, cement, and he'd mix it all up, and he'd stick it all on the side of the house and patch it all up, and it would look good for a little bit. One day he was putting it on, smearing it on. He had all the way down to the other end. He got right just about finished, and it just all unrolled off the wall, all the way down to the other end. I don't think he swore, but he was very upset. He had to do it all over again. But it never stays. Doesn't matter what you put on there, it won't stay. Because you can smear it all on, and you can put it on nice and thick and everything else. Nothing, it won't stick, because the foundation itself is poor. The gravel starting to come loose and all that kind of thing inside. So, you know, you can see if you see something like that, it just brings it to mind so quickly. When Jesus said, you better build your foundation solid. Because he knows what's coming, you see. God knows that there's a storm really on the way. And he wants us to stand, to be able to go in there and to sit in our house, and when this storm hits, he wants us to have warmth, shelter, he wants us to have proper supplies, proper heat, whatever it is that we need. God wants us to survive. And so he's telling us ahead of time, don't build with garbage. Don't find some scavenger, you know, don't go out and scavenge some kind of wood that's no good. Don't bring in rotten metal. We don't want rusted metal that's going to bend. We don't want stuff that won't take paint. You want a good, solid foundation that's strong, and when the wind blows and the waters come, they just bounce off. That's what God wants for every one of us. He wants all of us to be able to survive and to be able to go forward towards His kingdom. Another point, with your home, you always want big windows that let in a lot of light. Do you ever go to live in a house where the windows are small? Yep, everybody probably has. When you started off renting or whatever it was, you rented a house and here was this little tiny window and you sort of, it's kind of gloomy in this house all the time. Why is it always gloomy in this house? Well, it's because there's no light. You haven't got big enough windows. And then afterwards you maybe get into a house where you find a great big picture window that stretches out more, and it's so beautiful. The sun comes in there. Sometimes I'll just go and lie down in my front, my front room, and let the sun just come in and just lay there and fall asleep on the carpet. And it's so beautiful to have the light, the nice bright windows. Matthew 4, verse 16, Jesus talks about light, making sure that we have the right kind of light in our homes. Matthew 4, verse 16, the people who sat in darkness have seen a great light. Jesus brings light. And upon those who sat in the region and shadow of death, light has dawned. God brings us light. And in Matthew 5 and verse 14, light is used for analogies. You are the light of the world. See, we need to bring light. Don't you just feel better when it's bright? One of the things I really didn't like about living in Ontario, I loved Ontario, it's a beautiful place, just gorgeous. But I hated the winters because most of the time it was gray and dull. Most of the time. Some days you had some nice clear skies and that, but we lived right by Toronto. And because of the lakes, with the humidity and that, it just seemed gray and dull all the time. And I was really itching to come back to Alberta because I don't care if it's 40 below if you have sunshine. The sunshine seems to be more sunshine here, and just the light makes you feel different. You feel gloomy, that kind of grayness, and you're kind of gloomy and dull. And I hate days like that. You just love the sunshine. And I don't care if it's 40 below. If you get the sun. And God is telling us that light is important. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Verse 15, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. And if we are the kind of people we should be, brethren, we should be bringing light to others. We should be bringing light into other people's lives. That's what Jesus said. So let's do that as much as we can. Let Christ do it through us, of course. Verse 16, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. One of the individuals up in our staff up there knows that I don't keep Halloween or any of these days because he came over for dinner one night and he found my stuff on the table and started reading. We had a long discussion. I think I told you about him. But it's interesting. He said, boy, I wish I had the guts not to keep Christmas and Halloween. He said, I really don't like them at all. I hate them, but I don't have the guts, he says, right now to not keep them because of family ties and all that kind of thing. And you'll find that a lot of people feel that way. And one of the reasons for it, the sad part about it, is that they don't have anything to replace those days. See, if we could only get the message out to them, we've got something that is so superior. It's so much better. See, in their Halloween celebrations and Christmas and these kind of things, they're looking for something. The reason they're doing for that is not because they hate God. Oh, we're just going to keep this day anyway because you can just go. That's not why. It's because they're looking for happiness. And they can't find it. And sadly, those days don't bring happiness. They're shallow, unfortunately, because there's very little meaning in them. You don't really understand Christ when you think of Him as a babe in a manger. You don't understand His power and His glory and His majesty. You just don't. He's not a personal God when you see a little baby sitting there. Right? That's the sad part about it. And when you don't understand the truth, you don't get a satisfaction, a depth of satisfaction with it, like you do when you keep God's days. When you keep God's days, you know that God is there and He's backing those days and He's with you in what you're doing. And it gives you satisfaction and strength. You don't get that. I've kept both. I know. We kept Christmas all the time when I was a kid. Yes, it's fun to have a meal together. It's fun to have presents. But half the time, we were disappointed in our presents. We wanted something and got something different. It was really based a lot on selfishness with the kids. I know that's the way I was. I can remember that. And it's still fun and it's still enjoyable and all that, but I'm saying the problem is that God is not happy with that. And that's not the only thing. It gives you a false understanding, a false kind of shallowness. You don't get the satisfaction. It's sort of like Chinese food. You know, after I eat Chinese food, I'm hungry again after about 2 hours. You know, it's a little bit lighter. It's not quite like a steak and potatoes and stuff that sort of hangs around for a while. Matthew 6, verse 22 is another verse. Matthew chapter 6, verse 22. The lamp of the body is the eye. If therefore your eye is good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. You don't want your home full of darkness. You want the light. You want lots of light. That's why we built that house with the bi-level style basement. We wanted to be able to put those big windows in. You don't want a little dinky window in your basement so it's gloomy and dull and dark, like many of the old cement basements, right? They didn't put a big window in. They put that little thing in there, and then you sort of wish that you could somehow knock that out and put in about a 4-foot window and get some light in the place, because you just feel better. It says here that if your eye is bad and your whole body will be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? We don't want that. We want light. We want to be following God's way of life, which is the way of light. Another point about the building products you put in your house to make sure they're solid and make sure your foundation is good, etc. What kind of fasteners do you use? What kind of fasteners do you use in your house? You use nails, screws, glue, whatever. They're important as they hold everything in place. They sort of hold everything in place until you put the whole thing together, and then the whole house holds itself together. Let's go to Matthew 7 and verse 21. Here's what will hold your house in place. This is what will give you a solid and powerful foundation. Matthew 7 and verse 21. This will strengthen our homes like nothing else will. Matthew 7 and verse 21. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. There's the glue that will stick your spiritual house together. When we are seeking God's will, that's what gives us a solid, rock-solid foundation and strength to what's going on, because we're seeking God's will. Jesus said he couldn't do anything, right, without the Father. And if Jesus could say that, how much more would we say that? He said he couldn't do anything without the Father. He wouldn't do anything without God, without knowing it was the Father's will. And he even said he had righteous judgment because he was seeking the Father's will. He didn't seek his own will. That's when you make mistakes. That's when we goof up. We begin to seek our own ways. The world has gone its own way, not God's way. Our nations are going down fast now, beginning to really. And there really is a lot of trouble, brethren, as far as the crops are concerned. Even the crops that were good down in the southern parts of the province, we have a farmer up there who has relatives down in the south. He said even the real good crops that were good, they can't get off. They haven't been able to get them off because of the rain and the snow on that. And it's going to be pretty dicey. It's going to be pretty dicey. We're going down a certain direction. We're probably gathering speed, it looks like. We're sort of on a downward slope, and we're beginning to gather speed with more and more problems. West Nile virus has finally made it out here, I guess. Somebody told me the other day a man died in Alberta. Is that right? Did you, anybody else hear that? I hadn't heard that. Okay. So somebody did die here. Oh, he got it somewhere else? Okay, I thought that might have happened, actually. He picked it up somewhere and brought came back with it. But it's supposed to be in the birds in that as well, in Saskatchewan now, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, too. So it's working its way this way. And, you know, is that in itself going to kill us or destroy our nation? No. But it's an indication. It's sort of like, you know, there's something wrong with your house. If there's something wrong with your house, you sort of know there's something wrong, but sometimes you can't put your finger on it. When we first moved up there, we were lucky we didn't die. We first moved up there, we got into this house, and we didn't know it, but the chimney, top of the chimney had fallen in and it was plugging the natural gas chimney, totally plugged. And so all the fumes were coming in the house, filling the house. I don't know how we didn't die. Luckily, there was holes, I guess, all over the house. Maybe this is one time when you don't want a really tight vapor seal, you know. So we've been doing little things all the time, trying to patch it up ever since. But it was like that. I forget how long that was, 6 weeks or 8 weeks when we went up there. And I was getting something done, and I got a fellow over, a plumber over, and he was trying to figure out what's going on. Because he was, that's what it was. We wanted a fresh air intake. And so I had asked him to come over and put a fresh air intake so we could pull air in from outside and use it, you know, for the furnace. And he couldn't figure out why there was a backward flow on this pipe. So here we are, didn't know this, and this stuff was coming into the house. And like I say, I don't know how much poison we absorbed, but I'm sure God just, you know, intervened and kept us alive, because you don't usually survive stuff like that. Because you're going to have all the carbon monoxide or whatever is produced there is going to be coming back into the house. And you're breathing that, you're sleeping there. I don't know. Again, I don't know how we lived, except maybe our time isn't quite right yet. So anyway, when we come down there, you've got to ask the question, well, what, you know, are we seeking God's will? Are we seeking God's will? Is there something wrong in our home somewhere that maybe we need to ask, you know, something we need to work on? Maybe that we haven't been working on as much as we should or whatever. Because Jesus does say, we've got to be very, very careful. We're not just putting on a show. Right? Much of religion today is a show. All of us know that. I mean, there have been jokes, you know, from time immemorial about religion. You know, why do you go to church and to show off your new hat and this kind of stuff? Putting on a show. Matthew 7, verse 22. Many will say to me in that day, many who think they're religious, right, who are religious and think they're okay, many will say to Jesus, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name? Haven't we been good, whatever, Christians, good followers, good religious people here? Cast out demons in your name. We went through all of these things, done many wonders in your name. We've been able to do all of these things because we're religious people, right? Everybody thinks, you know, these people think they're okay. And he says, then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Somehow Christ wasn't in their home. He wasn't in their spiritual house. They built a spiritual house, but forgot to have Christ in there somehow. Messed up someplace. He says, the problem is this, depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. Here's individuals who think they're religious. Probably go to church every Sunday, probably, or go to Mass or whatever it is, whenever they go. And they think they're okay. But the problem somewhere comes in where something is wrong in their spiritual home. There's lawlessness. Now, what could that boil down to? What would lawlessness be? Well, it would be refusing to accept the commandments of God and refusing to accept the holy days of God, even though they are outlined in God's Word. Even though they're there and Jesus tells people about them, people refuse to keep them. That's lawlessness. It's not just somebody who's going out and shooting people and murdering or anything like that. You know, sometimes that people make a mistake in thinking that, oh, lawlessness, oh, it means they're out selling drugs. No. No, no, no. They're not doing the things that Christ says to do in His Word. Selling drugs is wrong, of course, obviously. Murdering is wrong. But that is not necessarily what it's talking about here. It can be talking about religious people. See, a religious person generally isn't out selling drugs, right? They're not out. You don't find your average Christian today out murdering on the streets. They leave that up to somebody else, right? That's not the average religious person. These are people who are religious people. And so you have to say, well, what is Jesus talking about here? It's somebody who's religious, who've tried to cast out demons or whatever, who have done miracles, but are refusing to keep the laws of Jesus Christ, the commandments and the holy days, things that Christ tells us to keep. So verse 26 then, Matthew 7 there, verse 26, everyone who hears these sayings of mine, and this is where he comes to this, if you hear these sayings and you don't do them, that's what he's talking about. He's talking about somebody like that who's building his spiritual house on sand and it's going to be washed away when the troubles hit and the problems hit. So it's somebody who is not doing those particular things that God tells us to do. And the lawlessness includes the whole package, all of the different things. People who have bought into Halloween, Easter, and Christmas because we are told by Christ not to do those things. And so the religious people are the ones who are involved in keeping those days still. It's sad that people haven't been able to understand what Christ actually is getting at. Because he's saying that house is going to fall down. Here they are building this gorgeous house, what they think is a beautiful house, maybe a big manor house with wrought iron gates and beautiful fence and beautiful territory and a lake in the front yard with lawns and all that kind of thing. They're building this beautiful place, and Jesus comes back and says, sorry, and it all falls down. Because he didn't build it with the right foundation. You want to build a manor house or whatever it is you're building, this beautiful place, but you want the correct foundation. You want it to be used, built properly, so it isn't going to blow down with the wind or be washed away. Sad to see that people don't understand that. You know, it's because it's their own, you know, their own loss, because they will not accept what Christ says. Jesus said many, many different places about the commandments of law that he would never come to do away with the commandments. Think not that I have come to do away with the commandments or the law. Don't think that, he says. Yet people think that. They come along and they say, well, he doesn't expect us to keep those old, terrible old Ten Commandments. Is there something wrong with not murdering? Is there something wrong with not stealing? That's unbelievable when you think about it, how Satan has pulled that off. Made people think that the Ten Commandments are very difficult and horrible to keep. Because you don't want to go and sleep with somebody else's wife. That's really difficult. No, it isn't. That's wonderful. The guy would thank you, right? Thank you over and over again. Thank you very much. Don't do that. That's good. But this is a terrible ten. People have referred to the terrible ten. It blows your mind away. That's loving people is to not steal their products, to steal their stuff, or covet their wives, or covet their property. Love people. That's what we are to be doing. When Jesus says, whatever I command you, be careful to observe it and don't add to it, he's telling us how to build the house, how you build a strong foundation. When I tell you, that was from Deuteronomy chapter 12 there that was quoted earlier. Jesus was brought up keeping the law of God. He was brought up as a child keeping God's law. It makes sense since he was the one who gave the law to Israel. He was the one, the God of the Old Testament, 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 2 to 5 there. You can read that later. Luke 2 talks about his parents going to Jerusalem every year at the Feast of the Passover, keeping that. Says when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem according to the custom of the feast. His parents kept the feast. Now, if God didn't want us to keep the laws of God or the feast days and all of that, why did he have Jesus born into a Jewish family, an Israelite family? Why not put him in a pagan family in Babylon? Because they could have said then, see, no commandments, no law, none of these Jewish feasts or any of this kind of stuff. No, he put Christ where he wanted him, where he would grow up keeping the feast days, keeping the Feast of Tabernacles, keeping the law of God, keeping the Sabbath day every week as their custom was. Okay, another major point Whoever is in our spiritual house generally operates in the way of giving. Your house will be based on the right pros of the right foundation. It'll be as solid as a rock if your attitude is one that is based on giving, trying to help other people, giving to them. Acts chapter 20, verse 35. Acts 20, verse 35. Foundation, one of the foundation principles of being a Christian. Acts chapter 20, verse 35. I have shown in every way, shown you in every way by laboring like this that you must support the weak. Remember the words of the Lord Jesus that he said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. It becomes a way of life. Not somebody who has barns that won't hold their products, so they build bigger barns, right, to store up and store up. That individual had plenty, but he wanted more. There's a lot of people right now who are sitting in jail and being charged with fraud and all that kind of thing, who were not poor people. They had millions, but they wanted more millions. These are guys who didn't have, you know, they weren't laborers out on the job making $12 an hour and just making ends meet, going home and trying to figure out how to pay the rent and how to get enough money for food, scrambling and, you know, scrimping. These guys who are doing these frauds in these major corporations were already worth millions and millions of dollars. And they're going to end up doing time in jail, sitting in jail in a crummy little jail outfit, right, with their fingerprints taken. And they'll have a record now for the rest of their life that they did time. Why? Because they weren't happy with $50 million. They had to have $350 million or whatever. You know, your mind sort of boggles. Now, if they'd only just known, when they had that $50 million or the $3 million or the $1 million or whatever it is they had, if they'd only just known this scripture, you'd be better off, folks, if you learned to give. And if they'd have just turned around and said, oh, I got a couple million bucks, that's a good idea. Maybe I'll give a bit of it away. Maybe I'll... Yeah, I know somebody who could use some of this money and give a little gift to this one, a gift to that one. They would have felt 100 times better, and they also wouldn't be sitting in jail. Just a simple thing. It works for, you see, not for just them, but it works for everybody. It works for us too, doesn't it? You feel better. You feel good when you've been able to help somebody. When you can do something, give something to someone, it makes you feel 100 times better than if you get it for yourself. And Christ knows that, and that's why he put that in there. Make your house a place where it's you're willing to share, where you're willing to give, where you're willing to feed, willing to help. Anything that you can do, make your spiritual home so that it's outgoing, so it's a giving one. And our spiritual houses will stand forever. We won't have to worry about any sand washing away. Won't have to worry about any cement wearing out or just deteriorating or collapsing. Never happen. Our spiritual homes built on the rock will stand forever. The one that you want to build, whatever it is that you're building in your home, the way you want it to look, it'll stand forever. Here's another major point about a house. It is very important to maintain a house. If you build a house and you don't maintain it, you're going to have a problem. What happens to your roof? You know, we had to redo the roof in our house up there. And you dig around in there and pretty soon you find rotten pieces of wood. Somebody didn't do it quickly enough, didn't maintain the house soon enough. So we had to go around the bottom and dig out all this rotten wood and take off boards and stuff that were rotten, then put new stuff back on, and then put the shingles on and everything, and it's fine now. But if somebody had done that, maybe 5 years ago, maybe 8 years ago, whatever, we wouldn't even have had to do half the work. We'd have just been able to go and put the shingles on. But we had to dig all this stuff out and rip some this and that and the other thing. And that's what God is telling us to do. Maintain your home. Maintain your spiritual house. Don't let the foundation crumble. Whatever you do, make sure you finish it off properly. If you've got to put that black guck on the outside, you know, when you're building the foundation, make sure you put lots of it on there and don't let the water get in there and start destroying the cement or whatever. Make sure we do it right. As you're going along, then you maintain it. You got to make sure that this is done and that is done, and you got to replace probably this and replace that, replace the carpet, check the pipes. If you got rubber pipes, make sure you turn the water off when you go out of the house, or you know, the rubber pipes on your washing machine and all that kind of stuff. Maintain. It's a lot simpler, isn't it, to maintain. Just turn the water off. It's really simple to turn the water off rather than go away for a few days and come back and find that the rubber hose popped and the whole house is full of water. Ask Leonard. He knows. He's a repairman. He does all that kind of work. And if you just do a simple maintenance on many things, it just avoids so much trouble. And of course, with Christians, how do you maintain your spiritual home? Prayer, right? Go to God. Make sure that you're going there regularly, that you're praying and you have the right contact with God. Make sure we have that right contact. You know if you have it. Nobody has to tell you. Oh, I think you should pray 27 minutes at 7:30 in the morning and then 27 minutes. Nobody has to tell you that as a Christian. You know yourself, don't you? I know. All of us do. We know whether we have the right contact with God or not, whether we're doing our prayer properly, whether we meditate on things like we should, whether we fast when we should fast. We know those things. You know and I know that your relationship with your spiritual home depends on your contact with God, the Father, and Jesus Christ. And that's all you have to say. Here's other things. 2 Timothy 2, verse 15, a part of maintenance, let's take a look here. 2 Timothy 2, verse 15. Part of maintenance is to make sure that we're actually studying God's Word as well, looking at it and making sure that we're keeping in contact with God through His Word. Be diligent, 2 Timothy 2, verse 15, be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. In other words, make sure that you're just reviewing it, because we'll forget. You know, the way the human mind is, we will forget certain things, and it's good to go back and just be reminded to maintain it. If you forget something in your home, forget to do something, it usually takes way, way, way more work to fix it than it does to maintain it. You know, that's the same thing with your car or anything. If you don't maintain your furnace, it's always a good idea, right, to go down every year, take that little can of oil, right? You go down there every year, and there's a couple little bearings on the side of the fan. You just squirt a little bit of oil in there. Now, your furnace might last 20 years without it. I don't know. But mine doesn't sound that good, so I keep putting a little bit of oil in there just to make sure that it, when it cuts in, it does this sort of, makes that funny noise so you, a little bit of oil, maybe we'll just keep it going for another few years. And of course, with our spiritual homes, we don't want to take a chance, right? You don't want to take a chance and let your guard down or let something happen so that the foundation starts getting weak or whatever. So we need to keep that contact with God. Make sure that we study His Word. And if we have questions, make sure we look at those things. What do we need to do? How can we improve? What areas do I need to work at? And if we know there's some problem there, get some, you know, whatever we need, get some help. And do whatever we can to make sure we are maintaining things properly. There's many things I could include here. However, time is drawing on, so I'll slip down to the final point. Finally, in our houses, we want a good security system. Now, if you don't have one, if you live where I do, we don't have one. It's sort of like, let's hope nobody breaks in. Nobody seems to want to. It's not much to take anyway, so you don't worry about it. We don't have a security system. We have our locks, but I don't have something you punch in. Generally, you don't really need it up in Valley View. Nobody really does any breaking in around our area, so we're not too worried about it. However, it is important to make sure that you, as an individual, are willing to live with that. If you live in Edmonton in some areas, probably wise to have a security system, depending where you are. If you live in a place where there's people have been breaking in or something, get a security system. In our case, we know that Satan would love to get in. So we all have a security system in our home, right? In our spiritual home. We all have that. It's here. It's a little sort of the red light that's in your mind. You know your conscience, you know that kind of thing. If he's trying to get in, you sense it immediately. If you're at home, Somebody comes to your door and starts making noises. You hear them sort of rattling something. You're out there pretty fast. You're checking that out. Who's trying to get into my house? Well, of course, in our case, with Satan, he's going to try to get in all the time. And we've got to watch it, because it could be just some little thing that starts taking place. Somebody starts saying something to us. Satan will try anything. Somebody will try to say something to us about somebody or whatever, and you think, that doesn't feel right. I don't like that kind of stuff. You know, I don't like that comment or whatever it is. You know, I'd rather not have any of that, thank you. Because Satan will try anything. The best security system of all, of course, is to have God with us, always on the premises, and then he looks after the whole thing for us. If Jesus is with us in our spiritual house at all times, we're not going to have a problem. We're not going to have a problem. He won't be able to do a thing. Satan won't be able to do a thing if Christ is with us and close to us. We know that. Let's go to James chapter 4 and verse 8. Read about it. James chapter 4 and verse 8. How do we do that? How do you make sure that Christ is with us on the premises? We want him here in services. We pray for his presence, right? We ask God to be here in spirit. Well, we want the same thing in our homes. You want God there all the time. How do you get him there? James chapter 4 and verse 8. Talking first about Satan, about the resisting of the devil, verse 7. And then verse 8, draw near to God. Here's your answer. How do you do it? How do you resist Satan? Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. There's a good principle, right? You draw near to God. Make sure that you are doing your part, whatever it is that we need to do, to make sure that God is there, and he will be with us. He says so. He says sometimes sin will cut people off, and that, but that's not us. That's not us. I mean, if we went out knowingly and wantonly, just started sinning and turning against God, that's a different story. But we make mistakes, we go to God and we say, you know, we want to come under the blood of Jesus Christ. Boom, the sins are gone. And he's always with us. He says that he'll never leave us. We can leave him, but he won't leave us. He says we draw near to him, he's going to be there always. If we went away from our homes to the feast, and you really wanted to look after your house, you could hire a private guard. Somebody who would sit in your home the whole time you're gone with a gun. In some countries, that's probably what they do. You know, there's some countries that are like that. But you could probably do that. In our case, you want to look after your spiritual house, God says it's easier than that. You don't have to hire anybody. He says, just draw near to me. You draw near to me, he says, I'll draw near to you. I'll be there. I will make sure that I'm in your home, in your spiritual home. When you build the spiritual house on the rock, then he says, I'll be with you and I'll take care of you. So always, brethren, let's do that. Let's do the best we can to draw near to God, to follow these principles, building the kind of house that we would rejoice in. When we built our home, I can still sort of feel, you still have that feeling that when you walk in the front door, and the home is finished, and you open the door, and you got the key there, and you unlock the door, and it's all finished. You walk in, and you just, there's a certain feeling, beautiful feeling. You just, this is our home. This is our house. We're going to live here. Well, our spiritual house will be like that. We're going to live in that spiritual house forever. And it'll be built properly if we build it on the rock.